Remember when the foundation of healthcare was science and fairness, openness, and access? Today, well, we have politics, conspiracies, whims, misguided policies by more outlets, really, than you're probably aware of, which are turning what's called healthcare into, I think we can almost call it an endangerment more than healing. My next guest is sounding a much-needed alert about all this, and he certainly brings the experience that mandates that you listen to him, from being the chief medical officer for New York City to being on the front lines of major disease outbreaks, Ebola twice just as an example. He shares his experience and observations in his new book, Pandemics, Poverty, and Politics, Decoding the Social and Political Drivers of Pandemics from Plague to COVID-19. He's also the CEO, co-founder, chief medical officer of the Wellness and Equity Alliance. Dr. Tyler Evans, how are you today, doctor?
I'm well. Good to be here.
Good to have you here to talk about this. Two websites, we do have them on our homepage, too, for Dr. Evans directly, TylerEvansMD.com. Learn more about the Wellness and Equity Alliance, WellnessEquityAlliance.com. And, again, we have those links up at our homepage. As a general overview, doctor, based on what I've read about your writings in both your book and various articles, when you look at the decisions and the policies being made and instituted in today's what we call healthcare, what are you seeing and how concerned are you?
I'm deeply concerned. The intersection of public health and healthcare is really important, and I think the sort of lay communities don't often sort of think about that. The divide between the two has sort of historically existed, and there's been a lot of cracks in the pavement, as I often describe it, between public health and healthcare. Public health should be sort of supporting healthcare to really just sort of, you know, create as much sort of prevention and guardrails around sort of communities as much as we possibly can, and to help to solidify the safety nets and provide as many, as many bridges as possible so that folks aren't sort of slipping through the cracks. But it doesn't work as well as it should for a number of reasons. And unfortunately, given the decisions and around policy and kind of operational impacts over the course of the last, ever since January, we are moving further away from where we should be. And unfortunately, there's been more kind of disruption and decimation to both clinical services, healthcare, and which I often describe as sort of community health and public health. Increasingly more folks that are sort of historically marginalized, or folks that do not engage or cannot engage in healthcare in the way that it's currently set up, which there's some good data on this, which is at least a third of the United States. That number is going to increase as the result of many of these changes.
And obviously, when, as I said back in the introduction, when politics and preference overtake science and purpose, how much of the responsibility falls on the healthcare consumer to not just blindly listen to someone because of their title, but, and certainly now in this tech age, if you don't have access to significant tech access, online, internet, whatever the case may be, you certainly have outlets like your local library that you can take your time, do research, and do study. But how much of the responsibility lays with the healthcare consumer about choosing what's right instead of putting their health and well-being into a trust of some sort with the wrong outlet, wrong service, wrong person?
Right. Well, that's a great question. I mean, the reality is at this point, it is increasingly up to the consumer. The consumer, the client, the patient. I mean, I'm a doctor, so I often refer to folks as patients. But it is increasingly up to them. And that's really unfortunate, because the reality is public health, population health should exist in order to provide a universal understanding of what the science is. You know, public health is not evidence-based. I mean, sorry, it's not opinion-based. It is evidence-based. And so it is led by science, And we should be promoting that. You know, the goal of public health communications is to provide the appropriate amount of information out to the clients or the consumers in order to better understand, essentially what the risks are out there and how to protect themselves against those risks. And also, you know, we talk a lot about wellness. I'm gonna organization called Wellness Equity Alliance. So it's not just about health, it's about wellness. It's going above and beyond and really kind of ensuring that we are kind of optimizing all dimensions of health and wellness, which sort of incorporates the mental health and behavioral health elements as well. So in a ideal world, when public health and healthcare are working well and the communications to the consumers is effective, then it should be pretty straightforward. You know, essentially, this is what the country says. This is what the nations or the states or the counties, top doctors, nurses, public health professionals. This is what everybody's saying. This is what we should be doing. Unfortunately, we've gotten into this space where there is increasingly more divisiveness around these topics that, really, but by design, are not intended to be divisive. They are intended to be to have sort of one message. And the way that I describe it is, if you are in the emergency room as a patient in the exam room, and you've got two doctors that are openly arguing about your diagnosis and your treatment, your confidence in that sort of system is going to be seriously compromised, right? So, and you're going to want sort of a second opinion. You're not going to really sort of believe in that system. So we need to get back to that. I'm an optimist, so I do think that we are going to get back. The best thing that I can say, the best advice that I could sort of, give to sort of listeners out there is, right now, I would just trust your doctors as much as you can. You know, trust your primary care doctors, because I cannot say with any reasonable amount of confidence that you should be listening to sort of, the CDC or any sort of government entity right now, because there's just too much divisiveness. And hopefully your primary care doctors or primary care providers are getting the right information from the trusted institutions like your American Academy of Pediatrics or your American Academy of Family Practitioners, et cetera.
Over Dr. Tyler Evans, his latest book, Pandemics, Poverty, and Politics, Decoding the Social and Political Drivers of Pandemics from Plague to COVID-19. He's also CEO, co-founder, chief medical officer of the Wellness and Equity Alliance, TylerEvansMD.com, WellnessEquityAlliance.com. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Going off what you just said, Doctor, I think a key part of bringing what you're hoping for to fruition is, like we're just seeing now, where the CDC, HHS give a negative guidance for vaccines, basically saying don't unless, but then you have states like New Jersey, Pennsylvania, I believe around 14 others, who are opening up the guidelines to, yes, do it because vaccines are beneficial for you. And that, I think with that question, and you get those two levels of discretion and openness, I would hope that the patient, the healthcare consumer, would see the openness as the more viable way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're going to be seeing are more alliances. You know, the West Coast just created an alliance around health between California, Oregon, and Washington. So I think we're increasingly going to be seeing that connection, which is largely based upon political correlations. And it really shouldn't be. I mean, you know, my book largely talks about how politics gets in the way when it comes to public health. Public health needs to be depoliticized. It is an apolitical entity, just like the fire service, that essentially is there for the public good. So it doesn't matter if it's red states or blue states. Ultimately, everybody should be protected by public health. Unfortunately, that is not the direction that we're going. And I think to your point, I do think that there's openly going to be more. There's going to be more kind of individualism when it comes to these sort of decisions. But my hope is that we can at least have certain sort of bands or sort of associations or alliances between certain sort of states that can kind of get the right message out there.
just to wrap up with about a minute or so left to go with your book, Pandemics, Poverty, and Politics, I think one of the key chapters that brings so much to light, and maybe this is my prejudice of being a fanatic for history, is indeed how you look at the history of various pandemics. What is one of the key lessons through its chapter 5 of your book, The History of Contemporary Pandemics and Public Health Emergencies of International Concern? What's one of the key lessons that we need to recall and embrace strongly today versus the direction, the guides that we're hearing that's from having read your book that's taking us away from that reality of history?
Sure. Well, thanks for asking that. That's really, you know, I think the book is really is unique as the result of this sort of this focus on history. And the reason, you know, I broke the book up into three different sections. The first section on sort of, you know, what is social medicine? What are the social determinants of health, and how does that impact infectious disease outbreaks to scale from epidemics to pandemics? The second section is a history of pandemics from 1899 to the present, essentially from the third plague to COVID-19. I'm also identifying a number of influenza pandemics, as well as Ebola and HIV. And essentially, there's a rubric that exists throughout all of these pandemics so that the reader can determine what the social and political drivers were in order to sort of scale those infectious outbreaks to epidemics to pandemics. And then hopefully by the end of the second section, which includes that chapter 5 that you just mentioned, folks can hopefully come to the conclusion that, yes, the social and political drivers did impact all of these sort of pandemics, and sort of, you know, famously the 1918 influenza pandemic. And then we get to the third section is, all right, now that we sort of have your attention and hopefully you are in agreement, what do we do about it? Because, you know, myself and a lot of, you know, my sort of colleagues in my organization is very solutions oriented. So the real lesson, throughout all of this is that there is a common thread, of these sort of social and political drivers, and essentially the infrastructures that exist, the foundations of the infrastructures that exist throughout the world. This is not an American problem. This is a global issue. Create a lot of, there's a lot of gaps. And in those gaps, it could be gaps in services, could be gaps in communications, could be gaps in sort of global collaborations, what the Chinese did on a number of occasions. And when those gaps exist, you're more vulnerable to more inequities taking place across the board. And the more that those inequities exist, those societies, those communities that are particularly historically marginalized, and what that means is, you know, it's largely poverty, but it's, you know, it's going to be your migrant communities, your homeless communities, your LGBTQIA plus, any other community that's had some marginalization. And again, poverty is the sort of the equalizer of a lot of these. The more destruction essentially that you're going to see, because again, those sort of gaps exist. And so when those emergencies hit, it's those communities, and it's not an insignificant amount. In the United States, we're talking 1/3 to 50% of the country. Those folks are going to be the first ones to fall through those cracks, and we're going to see increasingly more destruction.
The book is Pandemics, Poverty, Politics, Decoding the Social and Political Drivers of Pandemics from Plague to COVID-19. Along with being an author with science-based factual presentations, as you'll learn from his book, he's also CEO, co-founder, and chief medical officer of the Wellness and Equity Alliance, Dr. Tyler Evans. Doctor, thank you for the information and, more importantly, the education, because without the knowledge and the direction, the information really does fall through the cracks, but you prevent that from happening. Thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. It's really important to explain the science and explain the public health as much as we possibly can. Great to be here.